This article is brought to you by the best-selling booksy Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to use the deal method to resolve a difficult workplace conversation that has stalled. 4 steps to restart a stuck conversation and reach real resolution. In short, a stalled difficult workplace conversation does not fix itself. The deal method gives you a 4-step structure to restart the exchange and reach a resolution both parties will honour. Without structure, people under pressure default to repetition, defensiveness, or silence. The deal method works by separating the issue from the person, hearing both sides, building a shared solution, and locking in accountability. A verbal agreement is not enough. The commitment must be specific, timed, and followed up. Definition: the deal method is a 4-step conflict resolution framework covering define the issue, explore perspectives, agree on a solution, and lock in the commitment, designed to turn a stalled or emotionally charged difficult workplace conversation into a structured, productive exchange with a clear outcome. You have sat across from someone at work and felt the conversation go nowhere. You said your piece. They said theirs. You repeated yourself, a little louder this time. They repeated themselves, a little more firmly. And then one of you said something like, "Well, I think we just see this differently," and the whole thing quietly collapsed. Nothing resolved. Both of you walked out of that room carrying the same unmet needs you walked in with, plus a fresh layer of awkwardness on top. I have been there more times than I care to count. And for years, I handled it the same way most people do. I either pushed harder and made things worse, or I let it go and hoped time would sort it out. Time never did. In Say It Right Every Time, I call this pattern the avoidance trap. And I mean it, avoiding the conflict is the worst thing you can do. You are not leading. You are hiding. What changed everything for me was learning that a difficult conversation needs structure the same way a building needs scaffolding. Without it, the whole thing leans and eventually falls. The deal method, which I introduce in Chapter 6 of Say It Right Every Time, is that scaffolding. It is a 4-step process built for exactly these moments, the conversations that have stalled, looped, or threatened to fracture a working relationship. Here is how to use it. Why stalled conversations need more than good intentions. There is a reason difficult conversations stop moving. It is rarely because both people are unreasonable. More often, it is because both people are fighting for the same thing in different languages: to be heard, to be respected, to have their concern taken seriously. Without a structure to channel that, the conversation becomes a tug of war where no one moves and everyone exhausts themselves. I have seen managers with genuine good intentions sit down to resolve a conflict and make it worse within 5 minutes, simply because they had no method. They tried to be fair and ended up being vague. They tried to listen and ended up being passive. Under pressure, without a clear process, people default to their worst habits. Structure is not a crutch. It is what allows you to stay clear when clarity matters most. If you are dealing with a situation where the initial attempt at resolution has already broken down, consider pairing what follows with the guidance in how to start a difficult conversation that's blocking your team's synergy. The two pieces work together. One gets you into the room, the other gets you through it. The deal method, a framework for resolution. Step 1. Define the issue. What it is. This step requires you to state the problem clearly, specifically, and without assigning blame. In Say It Right Every Time, I describe this as the neutral problem statement, and it is the most important thing you will do in the entire process. Why it matters. Most difficult conversations stall because the two people are actually arguing about different things. One person thinks the argument is about the missed deadline. The other thinks it is about not being trusted. Until you have a single, shared definition of the problem, you cannot solve it together. How it works. Number 1. Before the conversation, write down the issue in one sentence. Test it. Does it describe a situation and its impact, or does it accuse a person? The client presentation went out with errors because the review process broke down is a problem statement. You are careless with the client presentation is an accusation. Number 2. Open the conversation by stating this neutral problem statement out loud. Invite the other person to confirm or correct it before you go any further. Number 3. If they reframe it, listen. Do not defend your version immediately. The goal here is to arrive at a shared definition, not to win the opening argument. When to use it? Always. Every difficult conversation needs a defined issue at its center. Without it, you are discussing feelings rather than facts. When it is not enough alone. If the issue is still disputed after two attempts to define it together, you may need a third party to help establish a neutral baseline. For conversations involving team-wide tension, the guidance in how to use the deal method to resolve conflicts that are fracturing team synergy addresses this well. A quick example. Two colleagues disagree over who owns a client account. Instead of saying you went behind my back with the client, try. We seem to have different understandings of who leads the client relationship, and that is creating confusion for everyone. Can we agree on what the actual problem is before we try to fix it? Eamon's note. The neutral problem statement feels unnatural at first. Most of us want to say our piece and let the other person respond. Resist that. Define the issue first. It is the difference between a conversation and an argument. Step 2. Explore perspectives. What it is. This is the listening phase. Both parties share how the situation looks from where they stand. The goal is not agreement yet. It is understanding why it matters. Conflict is rarely between two unreasonable people. It is almost always between two people with unmet needs who cannot yet see past their own position. When you understand what the other person actually needs, the path to a solution becomes visible. How it works. Number 1. Ask the other person to share their perspective first. Use a direct, open question. Can you help me understand how this situation looks from your side? Then listen without interrupting. What you're listening for is not just the surface argument, but the need beneath it. Number 2. When they finish, reflect back what you heard before you offer your own view. This is not agreement. It is acknowledgement. So what I'm hearing is that you felt left out of the decision. Is that right? Number 3. Share your own perspective with the same level of specificity. Stick to your experience of the situation, not your interpretation of their motives. Number 4. Use what I think of as the journalist mindset. Stay curious, not combative. Ask follow-up questions rather than preparing your counter-argument while they are still speaking. When not to use it. If the other person is not willing to share honestly, or if they use this phase to unload a list of grievances that expand well beyond the issue at hand, you may need to gently redirect. I want to hear all of this. For now, can we focus on the specific situation we agreed to discuss? A quick example. A manager sits down with two colleagues who refuse to cooperate. Instead of telling them both to just get along, she asks each one, separately, to describe what working together feels like from their perspective. She listens for the unmet need. One needs recognition. The other needs clarity about boundaries. Now she has something to work with. For a detailed guide on exactly this situation, see how to use the deal method to diffuse tension between two colleagues who refuse to cooperate. Eamon's note. The hardest part of this step is staying genuinely curious when you disagree with everything being said. I have sat in conversations wanting to correct someone mid-sentence, and I have learned to hold that impulse down. Let them finish. What they say at the end is often the real issue. Step 3. Agree on a solution. What it is. This is where both parties move from understanding the problem to building a shared answer. The emphasis is on the word shared. A solution that is imposed on one person is not a solution. It is a temporary ceasefire that will break down under the next pressure. Why it matters. Most conflict resolution efforts fail here. People rush through the earlier steps and arrive at this point without genuine buy-in. Then they settle for a vague agreement. Let's try to communicate better. That is not a solution. It is a wish. How it works. Number 1. Ask both parties to propose what they need from a resolution, not what they want the other person to do differently. This is a critical distinction. I need clearer communication about project changes is workable. I need her to stop being passive-aggressive is not. Number 2. Look for the overlap. In most workplace conflicts, there is at least one area where both parties want the same outcome. Start there. Build their agreement outward from that shared ground. Number 3. Test the solution against both sets of needs before you finalize it. Ask each person, does this address what you raised? If either person says no, keep building. Do not move forward on a solution that leaves someone behind. When to apply extra care. When the conflict involves feedback or performance, the SBVI method situation behavior impact works well alongside this step. It helps frame the agreed changes in concrete, observable terms rather than personal judgments. That article, How to Use the Deal Method to Resolve Disagreements About Feedback at Work, covers this in detail. A quick example. Two team members disagree over who presents their shared work to senior leadership. Rather than splitting it arbitrarily, they use the step to identify what each actually needs. One needs visibility with leadership, the other needs recognition within the team, the solution becomes a joint presentation where each owns a distinct section, satisfying both needs. Eamon's note: win-win sounds like management jargon. In practice, it just means you look for the need underneath the position. Most of the time, when you get there, the conflict is smaller than it looked from the outside. Step 4. Lock in the commitment. What it is. This is the step most people skip, and it is the step that determines whether anything actually changes. A verbal agreement is not enough. The commitment must be specific, assigned, timed, and followed up. Why it matters. Unspoken expectations are premeditated resentments. I wrote that in Chapter 6 of Say It Right Every Time, and I believe it completely. The same principle applies to vague commitments. When you leave the room without a clear record of who does what by when, you create the conditions for the next conflict before the ink on this one is dry. How it works. Number 1. At the end of the conversation, summarize the agreed solution out loud. Do not assume both parties heard the same thing. Say it explicitly. So we have agreed that X will happen by Y date, and Z will be responsible for it. Is that correct? Number 2. Write it down. A shared email summary sent within 24 hours of the conversation is the minimum standard. For significant conflicts, a brief written record that both parties can refer to is essential. Number 3. Schedule an accountability check-in. Agree on a specific date when you will both return to assess whether the solution is working. This is not a punishment. It is a commitment to follow through. Number 4. If either party is reluctant to put the agreement in writing, treat the reluctance as a signal. It usually means the commitment is not as genuine as it appeared in the room. A quick example. After a tense conversation about project ownership, two colleagues agree on a new division of responsibilities. Before they leave the room, one of them summarizes the agreement, names the specific tasks each person will take on, and proposes a 2-week check-in. A short email follows that afternoon. 3 weeks later, the issue has not resurfaced. Eamon's note: I spent years thinking a good conversation was enough. It is not. I have watched people shake hands in a meeting room and walk out to do exactly what they were doing before. Lock it in. Write it down. Set the follow-up. The conversation is not done until you do. Choosing the right moment to use each step. The deal method works best when used in sequence, but stalled conversations do not always present themselves in order. Here is a quick guide to where you may need to re-enter the process when a previous attempt has broken down. Situation re-enter at. The conversation has become circular and repetitive. Step 1. Redefine the issue as a neutral problem statement. One person feels unheard and has shut down. Step 2. Return to perspective exploration with a direct question. An agreement was reached but felt hollow. Step 3. Rebuild the solution with explicit needs on the table. The resolution was agreed, but nothing changed. Step 4. Lock in accountability with a written summary and follow up. Emotion has escalated to the point of unproductive exchange. Pause the conversation, then re-enter at step 1. The framework is not rigid. It is a map. If you find yourself lost in a conversation, look at the table above and find your footing before you continue. Keeping conversations from reaching a boiling point before you apply the deal method is equally valuable. The core framework is specifically designed to help you stay grounded when tension rises during a difficult exchange, and it pairs well with what you have learned here. Where the deal method most often breaks down. Knowing the framework is one thing. Using it under pressure is another. These are the errors I see most often, and the ones that most reliably send a conversation back to square one. The mistake: skipping step 1 and jumping straight into perspectives. Why it happens. People assume both parties already understand the problem the same way. What to do instead? Spend the first 5 minutes of the conversation only on the neutral problem statement. Do not proceed until both parties agree on what you are actually trying to solve. The mistake: using step 2 as an opportunity to build your counterargument rather than to listen. Why it happens. Most of us prepare what we will say next instead of paying full attention to what is being said now. What to do instead. When the other person is speaking, take brief notes on what they are saying rather than formulating your response. The act of writing keeps your attention on their words. The mistake: accepting a vague solution in step 3 because the conversation has been difficult and everyone wants it to end. Why it happens. The relief of arriving at any agreement overrides the discipline to make it specific. What to do instead. Before you leave step 3, test the solution against a simple standard. Could a third party read this agreement and know exactly what needs to happen? If not, it is not specific enough. The mistake. Skipping step 4 because the conversation felt resolved. Why it happens. The emotional release of resolution creates a false sense that the work is done. What to do instead? Treat step 4 as non-negotiable. The commitment is the outcome. Everything before it is preparation. For a deeper look at how communication habits affect team performance well beyond conflict moments, the piece on why effective feedback is the backbone of workplace growth is worth your time. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling books they write every time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblackthorne.com. Now, back to the article. Building fluency with the deal method over time. You will not master this framework in a single conversation. That is not a flaw in the method. It is the nature of any skill that requires you to stay composed while someone else is not. Start by using the method in low-stakes situations, a minor disagreement with a colleague, a small misalignment on a project. Practice naming the issue neutrally before you say anything else. Practice asking for someone's perspective and reflecting it back before you offer your own. These are the muscle groups the method depends on, and they need repetition before they become instinctive. The role of communication in setting up better conversations from the start is also worth studying. The article on the role of communication in meeting success offers practical grounding on how structure applied before a conversation even begins reduces the likelihood of a stall. Here is the truth of it: a repaired relationship is often stronger than one that was never tested. I've seen colleagues come out of a well-handled difficult conversation with more respect for each other than they had before the conflict began. That outcome does not happen by accident. It happens because someone had the courage to use a structure when the pressure was highest. What to carry forward from every stalled conversation? Every difficult conversation that stalls is telling you something. Not that the conflict is unsolvable, but that the approach needs to change. The deal method gives you a clear framework to make the change deliberately rather than reactively. Define the issue neutrally. Explore perspectives with genuine curiosity. Agree on a solution that serves both sets of needs. Lock in a commitment with specificity and a follow-up. That is not a theory. That is a practice. And like every practice, it earns its strength through repetition. The full framework, along with scripts you can take directly into the room, is covered in Chapter 6 of Say It Right Every Time. The deal method is there alongside several other tools for the most challenging conversations you will face at work. This much I know for certain: the conversations you avoid do not disappear. They grow roots. The deal method gives you what you need to face them before they do. Frequently asked questions. What is the deal method? The deal method is a four-step conflict resolution framework. Define the issue, explore perspectives, agree on a solution, and lock in the commitment. It turns an emotionally charged or stalled difficult workplace conversation into a structured problem-solving exchange that leads to a clear, accountable outcome. Why do difficult workplace conversations stall? Difficult conversations stall when people argue positions rather than addressing underlying needs, when one or both parties feel unheard, or when no clear structure guides the exchange. Without a framework, pressure strips away good intentions and people default to defensiveness, silence, or repetition. How do you restart a stalled workplace conversation? Start by naming the stall directly and calmly say that the conversation has stopped moving and that you want to find a way forward together. Then return to the first step of the deal method, redefining the issue as a neutral problem statement rather than an accusation, and rebuild from there. When should you use the deal method at work? Use the deal method when a conflict has become circular, when a difficult conversation keeps returning to the same arguments without resolution, or when emotions have escalated to the point where productive dialogue has broken down. It works best when both people are willing to engage. What is a neutral problem statement in conflict resolution? A neutral problem statement describes the issue without blame or accusation. Instead of saying what someone did wrong, you describe the situation and its impact on work outcomes. It gives both parties a sheer definition of the problem to solve together, rather than a position to defend against. How do you lock in a commitment after a difficult conversation? After agreeing on a solution, state it clearly, assign specific actions to specific people, set a timeline, and agree on a follow-up check-in. A verbal agreement alone is not enough. Writing down what was decided and scheduling accountability removes ambiguity and makes the resolution stick. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblickthorne.com to get your copy.